Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Accreditation Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct several question-and-answer sessions, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Matthew Wasserberger. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I know I've spoken with many of you over the past few months, and we've put together a few of these conference calls in the past, and we're going for our third. We hope to have a good one today. We have Bradley Peck starting it off. He's the Senior Director for Communications at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He will be discussing communication strategies for a five-star chamber. He'll be talking about the communications section as well as the technology section, and we will host a brief question and answer session after he's finished to take any of your questions regarding these sections. Following Bradley, we have Rex Hammond from the Lynchburg Regional Chamber of Commerce. Rex is the chamber president and CEO in Lynchburg and one of our first five-star accredited chambers. Rex will go over some general hints and tips to become a five-star chamber, and again, we'll take a extensive question and answer session at the end for Rex and myself regarding this current application and the procedures and steps to submit in December or March. I'd like to open it up to Brad Peck, who will begin the first session. Brad?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me today. Just to give you a little bit of background, I am a computer programmer by trade. So most of my the focus of my work is on online and new media. So I'll probably be heavily on that, but I do work with the rest of the communications team. So when we get to questions, you know, we can go more there. Often a lot of questions on what should you do online, specifically on a website. And the answer I always give is that you should do online what you can do online. It sounds sort of simplistic, but the fact is it's better to do a few things well than to do a bunch of things poorly. And what I mean by that is if you have an event calendar on your website, it needs to be up to date. It's not a question of putting it up once and then leaving it. It's really about setting an established schedule and sticking to it and setting expectations for your members. Along that front, I've been working a lot in the last year on new media and blog outreach and stuff, and I run the Chamber's blog at chamberpost.com. And that's been a very exciting time. I think the whole new media thing is essentially reduced barriers to entry for communications. It's no longer necessary to create friendships with just one person who's going to get out all the information that you need, be it a local reporter or a local television station. So you kind of have to be everywhere. And I think that a key to that is you certainly want to drive traffic to your site, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, but you also need to go where the traffic is. So, for instance, if you have a local newspaper that's fairly well-read, you want to have someone who reads that newspaper, as I'm sure you already do, but also if they allow commenting on articles, you want to get in there and comment. Just as a sort of a case study, I'm going to go over something that we did yesterday, which is fairly interesting. We had a new ad on the Employee Free Choice Act that we published yesterday, and it hasn't played anywhere in the United States. But the media team reached out to reporters, and I reached out to bloggers, and we put the ad up on YouTube, and we had about 11,000 views in the last 24 hours just by reaching out to bloggers and reporters. I went to a session here last year at GW University that really focused on the impact of local bloggers. and building an audience and creating a message. And that's really, you know, the U.S. Chamber, we're trying to do this all the time, and you guys should be too. It's great for you to be saying your message, but people expect you to be saying your message. It's important for other people to say your message. So looking at the technology necessary to do that, you know, technology is occasionally intimidating, and there's certainly a lot of new technology out there. The good news is there's a lot of free technology out there. For instance, you can build a website on WordPress, which is a blogging tool, which is essentially a free blogging tool where you're only paying for the hosting. And there are a lot of tools built into there. And so it's sort of, you don't necessarily need to rebuild everything that's already available. At the Chamber, we've started putting a lot of our photos from events and stuff on Flickr, which is FLICKR.com, Flickr.com. And we've created a photo channel in there so that when we host events, we can put photos up there and then send the URL out, and people can go up and look at them and download them. And that's something that you don't, you know, have to pay someone to set up. And the added advantage is you tag the photos in there. So, for instance, we have a channel up there on the signing of the ADA Amendments Act. So anyone searching for the ADA Amendments Act on Flickr or elsewhere gets exposed to those photos. So, for instance, you know, locally, if tourism is a goal and you have a local parade or something, you can take pictures of the parade and put it up on Flickr, and you tag it with the name of your town and tag it with the name of the event, and people searching, you know, can find it there. So that's another, you know, one of those sort of free tools up there that just involves time, you know, and not necessarily a whole lot of time. It's sort of interesting, a concept that I've been really pushing here at the Chamber and is gaining a lot of traction is the idea of crowdsourcing. Which is basically writing a short update of something or taking a picture of something isn't necessarily something that always has to be done by professionals. With digital cameras out there, someone, you know, might go to an event, one of your members may come to an event, and they could take 50 pictures, and perhaps only 5 of them are usable, but that's 5 pictures that you don't have to take. And by posting them up there, you sort of create a sense of community while getting your updates in place. So going through the technology session, you know, obviously I'm sure most of you have websites. I'm sure most of you regularly update the Chamber's website. Regarding updates, an important thing is you should update the website as often as you need to update the website and set that expectation. A lot of times at our Small Business Summit last year, I was speaking with the Chamber, and they, you know, wanted to start a blog, which, you know, is a great outreach mechanism. And they were asking me, well, how often do I need to post to the blog? And I said, well, you need to post to the blog as often as you post to the blog and tell people you're going to post to the blog. So if you're going to post once a week when something happens, then that's fine. You can post once a week when something happens, and the audience knows that that is the schedule that you're posting on. I think a trap occasionally with technology is people get very excited about it, and they start off posting 10 times a day or uploading pictures from every event, and then as normal work catches up and it sort of loses some of its bloom, then you trickle down to only updating it once a day and then once a week, and then a lot of times it sits there dormant. So it's really a question of regularly scheduled updates. And if that's a weekly newsletter, if that's a monthly magazine, it's establishing with your audience how often you're going to communicate to them and by which methods, and then sticking to it. Again, I'm really on the e and online side of things, so I certainly push that if you have a monthly print magazine, it needs to be online. You know, one of the amazing things about the internet is people find stuff in very different ways. I run the blog and I see these search terms they're amazing. And I'll go back to another example. The Chambers is working very hard, the U.S. Chamber is working very hard on the Employee Free Choice Act or card check. And on Saturday, just another little case study here, there was an article in the Washington Post on the strike that Boeing's going through and the union demands there. I put up a post on our blog on the Boeing strike, which the Chamber, Boeing, is a member, but it's not necessarily something that we're involved in. We're not meeting with Boeing on the strike or whatever. Because of the way the Internet works, we picked up about 1,200 people came in and read that post and were exposed to the Chamber's message on the Employee Free Choice Act and on other elements of the union agenda by sort of piggybacking on the popularity of that post. And another good tool for that to sort of see what words are being searched on and try to piggyback on the popularity of those words is Google Insights for Search, which is at google.com/insights, or if you go to Google and search for Insights for Search, it'll pop up. And what you can do there is go on there and see sort of around your area and you know, businesses that are members of yours, you can plug in different search terms and see how people are searching for those words and see the popularity of certain terms. We use card check at the Chamber for the Employee Free Choice Act. I'm just going back to this because this is the most recent example. But we could go on Google Insights for Search and say, well, hey, we're using card check. Are we getting all the results that we can, or are there other words we can use? So we could compare, you know, Employee Free Choice Act to card check. We can compare, you know, union boss to union leaders or union organizers and find the specific search terms that are good there. And it's not something that just can be used in the blog. It's something that you can look at and probably should look at for almost any content you put up online. Because it's we have words that we use, and they're not always the words that the public is thinking of. So I brought up the Lynchburg Chamber going, you know, in anticipation of the question and answer coming up. There's a, you know, an upcoming event, Talent Management in Turbulent Times. And that's a Talent Management in Turbulent Times. It's, I think, important, just a tip for Lynchburg. You can go out to Google Insights for Search and see if talent management is the right term to use or if there's some other word you can use in there, like talent development or workforce development or hiring management, and use sort of that Google Insights for Search to sort of get an idea of how people are looking for things online and use that to your advantage. Going back to, and I'm going to use another Google example, but they have a lot of free tools out there. That massive ad support allows them the freedom to offer these things for free. But Google has a tool called Analytics, and I would strongly suggest that you sign up for Google Analytics in your website or use some other web tracking tool. And what that does is allow you to see how people are getting to your website via search terms, and also what people are doing when they go to their website. I'll go back to the Lynchburg Chamber for a second just because I have the page up. There's a big section on the Lynchburg Chamber for upcoming events and where that is. Using Google Analytics, you can go in and see, okay, we have upcoming events. That's obviously important to us. How many people coming to the homepage are clicking to upcoming events, or how many are clicking to find a business? And you can sort of see what people are looking for when they come to a website, and also look at, well, how can this is what they're looking for versus this is what we want them to see. And you can test sort of various configurations of the page to make sure that in addition to people finding what they're looking for, which is important, you also want them to see what you want them to see. The local chamber directory is a very popular section of the U.S. Chamber website, and we've sort of experimented over the years with putting other items on that response page. So in addition to we want the people coming in to find their local chamber, but we also want the people coming in to, you know, be aware that, you know, this bill is in front of Congress, and we want them to click through to write a letter. So that's a sort of another element is using the Google Analytics tool to track how people are using your website. Again, it's a free tool. I will issue a caveat. It doesn't collect all data. It is a JavaScript-based tool, so depending on the browser that the user's working on or the visitor's working on or the firewall they're behind, it does filter out some data, but it's a good apples-to-apples comparison. I think that we have a magazine here at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and we like our magazine, and we really view it as an important sort of hard copy member touch. It gives people something, you know, definite to hold every month. But a lot of time goes into writing those articles and assembling the magazine. So we have that magazine online as well, and something we added last year was allowing members to comment on the articles in the magazine. And it's a members-only feature, and that's gone over very well. Our weekly commentary that goes out via email, which is part of the magazine website, typically gets between 30 and 100 comments, depending on the topic. Some topics are more widely read than others. But I think that I really want to answer questions here and have a discussion, but I think that the you know, in order to be, you know, the best chamber you can be, it's a question of doing the things that you're already doing the best way possible and then exploring all of the other opportunities that are out there. YouTube, we have a YouTube channel here at the chamber. You can go down to Sears or Best Buy or Circuit City or a local store and buy a camera. It's called a flip camera for $110. We had our bus tour here. We bought three flip cameras and put them on the bus tours, and you literally just push to record. You can conduct interviews at the streets. If you have an event, you can corner some people afterwards and just get 1 and 2 minute clips saying, oh, I like this event, this is what I learned. And it's really easy to pop it up on a YouTube channel. You plug the camera into your computer, download it, and you can upload it to YouTube. And then the YouTube gives you the ability to embed the video anywhere on your website. They just give you a small snippet of code that you can post in your website. So when you have an event that's passed, you can put that video up there. Or if you have an upcoming event that's on the same topic, you can put that video up there as well. I think that, you know, one of the things that we struggle here with at the chambers, we're always moving forward. So we have a lot of events, but it's sort of as soon as the event is over, we move on to the next event. And I think using some of the video and photo sharing sites allows you to build sort of a library of support material that you can use in the future. On the bus tour, we probably took about 150 different videos, and some of them are on topics that aren't necessarily on the top of people's minds right now. But when tax cut renewal, for instance, comes up, I have a folder with 5 tax cut videos in there from small business owners talking about how tax policy affects their business, and I can pull that in and, you know, when that time comes, and it sort of looks like you just took the video, but it's actually, you know, sort of from your media library. So I think that, you know, using statistics to see what you're doing and doing it better and sort of also exploring all of the things that are out there are the best way to move your communications forward. And I would also encourage you to, if you read an article in your local paper and you think it was a good article or a bad article, you can go to, again, I'm going to throw in Google. Google has a blog search. There's also a blog search tool called Technorati, where you can plug in the title of that article or the URL, and you can find out people in your local area or even people nationally in some cases who also thought that was a good article and a bad article. And you can, you know, reach out to them with a message in support or a message sort of correcting the article. It's Read an interesting study over the summer that the average person is exposed to something like 3,000 messages a day, advertising messages, etc. And but only 18% of people actually respond to them in the sense that they even pay attention to them or they even trust them. But on the flip side, 72% of people said that they trusted things that their friends recommended to them. So you can write all the movie reviews in the world, and it doesn't have as much weight as one of your friends saying, you need to go see this movie. So it's important that it's not always you saying your message, but it's your members saying your message, and it's other business supporters in your local community saying your message, because they are you're expected to say your message. It's when other people say it that you build up support. So, operator, if you're there, I'd like to go ahead and take some questions, and I'm sure I missed a lot of gaps because, again, I'm sort of a new media focus here, but I'd like to answer questions and have a conversation about what you're doing and what you're not doing and how we can all improve.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 key. We have a question from Connie Kilmore of Hilton Head.
Hi, this is Charlie Clark with Hilton Head Island, the Chamber here. And I just had a question on regarding your comments on articles, allowing your members to comment on your articles that are posted online. Have you ever found that to work against you? How do you deal with any kind of negative comments, or has that ever been an issue?
It's actually, we have a ton of negative comments, actually, particularly on, it's sort of strange on I'm going to go with climate change, for instance. You know, we have articles on climate change basically stating that we're not fighting the science here. There's obviously going to be some sort of regulatory system put in place to regulate this, so we need to make sure that it is based on science and not on fear. We get a ton of comments, you know, assaulting the position that anything should be done on climate change. And it's sort of, you know, it's sort of tricky for us because, you know, we are, you know, involved in negotiations and stuff on the Hill, so we can't come out and say, oh, well, these people are right. We on the blog, we get fewer comments than on the magazine. But on the blog, I try to actually respond to comments. If there's, you know, a question in there or if they say something that's wrong, I try to respond. On the magazine site, they do it a little differently, the people that run the magazine, in that they will basically pull the comments for each article and review the comments and respond in a later piece. Not necessarily directly to the comment, but sort of obliquely, in that if you know, we have 30 comments saying that we do need a nationalized healthcare system, for instance, in the next healthcare article we have, we may devote one or two paragraphs to explaining why that's a bad idea. So I think that, you know, there's two ways to go about it. The one thing with comments is you generally have the angry people commenting. I think on a lot of the big social sites, there are the dovetail comments that say, oh, this was a great article, you know, and then there are 50 comments after that saying, I agree, it was a great article. But I think on sort of the member outreach, we're sort of encouraging a conversation, so we do not filter comments. And that was a conscious decision. I won't pick on someone who's normally friendly to us. I'll go ahead and pick on someone who isn't. The AFL-CIO, for instance, has a blog, and they moderate their comments, that the comments have to be approved before they go up. And that is a valid mechanism. But the fact is that they then filter the comments. We've submitted comments on their blog post before that they have not put up. And we don't necessarily feel that that's useful. But we do draw the line on personal attacks, and we do reserve the right to remove comments that sort of cross the line. Our weekly commentators by our president, Tom Donahue, you can say, Tom is wrong on this. We don't need to do anything about climate change, and that's a comment that we'll leave up there and perhaps seek to address in the future. If the comment is, Tom Donahue's an old white guy who doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, we're probably going to take that comment down. So it is sort of a double-edged sword. With all of these social media techniques, and LinkedIn and Facebook are another, some more possibilities out there, the important part of social media is the social part. And you really need to decide how social you're willing to be, sort of before you go into that. Again, it's sort of setting expectations. On the magazine site, there isn't an expectation that we're going to respond to every comment on there or engage in that. But I think on the blog, I have sort of set the expectation that if you put a comment up there that's presents an argument in a reasonable fashion, I'm going to reasonably respond. Did that help?
Thank you. The next question comes from Betsy Sheridan of Hopkinsville.
I haven't had a chance to take a look at the new application that's supposed to be posted, I think, in November, but I'm just kind of curious whether or not the blog is actually a requirement to be 5-star accredited.
Matt, do you want to answer?
Yeah, I'll take this one. It is not a requirement to have a blog. However, it is mentioned in numerous sections of the application, what you're doing with future technologies. So it's the points that are allotted for that question are kind of a combination of your communications outreach, and a blog is a component of that. But if you have other mechanisms, email, magazines, e-newsletters, that type of thing, you can make up points for that. So a blog is just one component of your overall communication strategy, and you do receive points for having one, but it's by no means necessary.
If I can jump in there, we 3 years ago or so is when we first had the discussion about having a blog, and we tried a couple of different tactics before we came to the decision that we needed to have a blog. First of all, I mean, the blog is really an instant reaction tool. Sometimes there are small stings, and you don't want to go after a bee with a shotgun. So if there's a blog post up on Huffington Post or Daily Cause, sort of attacking the chamber or attacking one of our positions, we're not going to respond with, on those two instances, since they're heavily trafficked, we may respond with an article or a press release or something, but probably not. So we decided to go with the blog to have a place where we could, respond to small offenses in a small way. And we also made the decision to move the blog off of the U.S. Chamber main website, so that we could be a little edgier and a little less official, so that we could. The problem with on the main website saying this is a great article in the New York Times today by this writer is it's sort of an endorsement by the chamber for the writer. So, it's sort of in the future then if he writes something that we don't agree with, you're sort of out there. We made the decision with the blog to separate it off the chamber's website. There's a lot more content up there. It's slightly less official, and we byline it. So it's, in a lot of cases, I'm just the guy in communications. I'm not the policy expert. So I can put up a healthcare link and say, this was an interesting article that said this, this, and this. And it's not Katie Strong, our healthcare person, having to answer some staffer on the Hill as to why we support this. So those were sort of the ideas behind it. I will say that you know, there are different ways to blog. It doesn't have to be separate. Club for Growth, which I think is actually clubforgrowth.com, it has a sort of an interesting way of doing it where the blog is sort of built into their website as their daily update section of their website. I know a lot of websites have sort of an in the news section. Again, I have the Lynchburg Chamber up here, and the two main sections sort of upcoming events and in the news, and that's where you're driving your messages. And that's the Club for Growth website, I think, does a really good job of building that blog section in there as their daily update.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the 1 key. Our next question comes from Jean McPheeters of the County Chamber.
Hi, I'm in Ithaca, New York, which is an extremely liberal town. You know, it's a college town. And that that point of view extends to my members. So I am not inclined to do a whole lot of linking to things that are going to be extremely conservative, because all that I will get is a whole lot of anger from my members, which is not going to be particularly useful to me in sort of moving ahead the agenda here. So what do you suggest for, for communities like ours?
I think sort of the challenge, I think the challenge for you is, particularly online, the communications has been boiled down into this binary split, right? It's something is either good for workers or for business.
Exactly.
You know, something is, yeah, I mean, that's really where it does. My main, a phrase that I use generally is, or a phrase I use around here and people get sick of hearing it is, if the other side wants to make it simple, you need to make it complicated. And if the other side wants to make it really complicated, you need to make it simple. So I think that, you know, in those instances where you see that it's good for workers, good for business, the answer is, I guess there's two ways you can do about it. You can either be really antagonistic, which is hard in the long run, because, you know, I think as we've seen with particularly online commentary, the problem with taking that antagonistic role is you end up becoming more antagonistic over time, and I think, you know, you end up alienating most of the audience. Or you can be just very pragmatic about it and say that, you know, we do need to pay for roads, but this, you know, this particular tax is not a good idea. And we, you know, we went through that with the SCHIP debate, the Children's Health Insurance debate. You know, it's we get all these quotes basically, you know, well, why does the chamber hate children? You know, why does the chamber hate people in wheelchairs? Why does the chamber hate puppies? You know, and you really just have to come back and be like, you know, no, we do not hate children. You know, we think that all children should be covered. And in fact, the current program only has a, you know, 70% enrollment rate, or and I think it may actually be lower. I can't remember now. This is last fall's issue. You know, so before we expand the number of people that can be enrolled, perhaps we should enroll all of the people who are currently eligible. And then going back to, and the way to pay for it is, you know, the best way to pay for children's health insurance is perhaps not to increase taxes on cigarettes, increase taxes on one industry. If this is something that we're committed to as a nation, then the nation as a whole needs to find a way to pay for it instead of, you know, picking an industry that no one's willing to defend. So I think that the sort of the making it complicated and you know, just to be honest, going into this election cycle and next year, you know, we've been working hard to sort of position ourselves as an honest broker of solutions versus a strict defender of partisan positions. So, I mean, I think that that's the, you know, this is a good point. We certainly need to do something about it, but this particular solution is not good for these reasons.
I agree with you, but what I worry about is, as I submit my application, is that people will judge our chamber and our way, and the way we are doing things as inappropriate in the world, in the larger world of the U.S. Chamber, and that's a concern that I have. As you know, I realize that my chamber's on the edge. My Government Affairs Committee pretty much thinks that the U.S. Chamber's positions on a lot of things are inappropriate. So that's a concern that I have, and that I think that many of us more liberal chambers have.
The Matthew, I mean, you can perhaps address the makeup of the evaluation panel politically. I have to say that my general view and the view that we try to take in our communications is that, you know, people are not wrong. They're just people have differences of opinion on a variety of positions. You know, we certainly at some point, like when we rate members in the whole Spirit of Enterprise Award, I mean, we do put there, you know, there is a approval rating there for the votes and everything, but I don't believe that applies to the accreditation process, Matt.
No, you're right, Brad. And the application tries to be as apolitical as possible. What we're truly evaluating here is your policies and your procedures and your mechanisms to get things done and be a positive force in your community. So what we're looking at is those government affairs meetings and that you're coming together and that you have, you know, the interests of your business community at heart and are moving those issues and
okay.
are
That's,
doing that
it makes
through
me feel better. Thank
your
you.
Community and your committee, what they decide. So,
thanks.
Thank you. We have a follow-up comment from Hilton Head. Hilton Head, did you have a comment?
Yes.
Please. Okay, please proceed.
I had a question about the YouTube video clips. Are those digital, or is it going more for an intimate and kind of informal handheld kind of interview?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of the question.
First part is, edit those videos at all, or is it more informal, the handheld camera, kind of more intimate interview that goes on?
Well, we actually have a variety of things up there. Some of it is just something you don't face that we do face is we are an Inside the Beltway organization, right? Inside the Beltway is one of those slurs that you're allowed to use at random, and no political correctness police are going to come out and say, you can't call them Inside the Beltway. We are an Inside the Beltway organization. So one of the things that we wanted to achieve with the bus tour is to, show that a lot of the positions that we represent are not necessarily Inside the Beltway positions. They're held in New Mexico, they're held in Texas, they're held in Colorado, they're held in California. So those were more informal handheld things. But there are a couple of different things. We have we've placed selected ads that we're running around the country on the YouTube channel. Those are certainly, you know, produced in a slick fashion. When we have speakers go out around the country, we webcast a lot of the speeches that occur in the building, when the speakers go out around the country, so it's not just General Jim Jones from the Energy Institute talking downstairs in front of the same backdrop he's spoken in front of 30 times before. You know, he's out in Fort Collins, Colorado, giving this speech. So I think showing the breadth of speakers, taking large events. We may have an event that runs for 6 hours here at the chamber, and there's really no way after the fact very many people are going to sit down and look through 6 hours. So a lot of times we'll film, you know, 6 hours worth of footage and then go in and pull out two or three, you know, 2 to 10 minute clips of sort of the important points. We've videotaped our media briefings. Recently the financial rescue bill, we videotaped a conference call with Bruce Johnson, who heads our advocacy efforts, and Marty Regalia, our chief economist. Marty's clip, which was essentially I can find it here, a 2 or 3 minute clip of the state of the, or 2 minute clip, here we go, of the state of the economy, you know, was fairly well received. And that was actually something, interestingly enough, that wasn't necessarily destined for public viewing, but we had, you know, 12 reporters on the call, but we videotaped this and then sent and uploaded them and then sent it out to like 30 more reporters. And we had 4 or 5 reporters write back and say, oh, this was great, I got this quote from Marty. It's sort of those emails that I print out and save, you know, when it's time for my evaluation. So I think that there are a variety of things. That the handheld videos, again, going back to people, there are a lot of really cool and a lot of really slick applications and products and ads out there. And I think that people sort of become immune to them. I think that having, you know, one of our members from New Hampshire talk about visa reform, H-1B visa reform, is in many ways far more effective than if we have our labor expert talking about H-1B visa reform. So we do sort of a bunch of different things there. There's a mix-up.
Something you are going to edit, say like the 6-hour piece, you have someone on your staff who's doing the upload on that camera, that handheld, and doing the edit job in-house, correct?
Yes, we do. But I do want to tell you that with some of the tools that are out there, it's pretty easy to do. The bus tour videos, because it was flying fast and furious, the people on the bus would plug the camera into their computer, upload 20 clips, and, you know, one of the clips might be 10 minutes long, and half of it is them running up to catch up to someone and get their name and everything. I sat down on my computer with a free movie editing software, you know, just grabbed the clip and said, you know, cut out this, start here, cut this, start here, and I occasionally put a title on and do it. I mean, it does take time. But it doesn't necessarily require a professional investment.
Thank you. The next question comes from Barbara DeBoom of Palm Desert.
Hi, Matt. Barbara DeBoom here. I have a group of 7 people here for each one of the sections. Could we move on to another section at this point?
Yeah. Do we want to move on to Rex?
Yeah.
Whatever you have next on the agenda would be great.
I think we can if you're ready, Brad, and Rex, if you're still there.
Yeah, do I need to press 1 to get in?
No, I think everybody can hear you.
Okay, very good. Greetings. My name is Rex Hammond. I'm the president and CEO of the Lynchburg Regional Chamber of Commerce in Virginia. The 5-star accreditation that Matt made reference to at the beginning of the conference call was my 4th accreditation with 4 different chambers of commerce. We are what I would consider a mid-sized chamber of commerce. We're in a metropolitan statistical area with about 220,000. I have 13 full-time staff and a budget of $1.7 million. And while that might not be small to some of you, I have intimate knowledge of a neighbor of mine who's with a chamber probably a 1/4 of our size that recently attained 5-star status. So if you get your ducks in a row, I'm offering this in the way of encouragement to even the smallest chambers on this call. I've been asked by the U.S. Chamber to put together some thoughts on accreditation, and I've shared these thoughts at Institute and on a couple previous calls similar to this. And I want to offer you some advice, and advice that's free. You can accept or reject it. But I'd also invite you to do one other thing. If there's anything that I say that's compelling, I'm looking at a PowerPoint that I prepared for my volunteers to get them fired up about this process and to answer the question, what's in it for me? Why should we go through the effort of this process? And if you would like this PowerPoint presentation, email me and I'll send it to you. Just feel free to pirate it because I stole it from somebody else. My email address is rhammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D, at lynchburgchamber.org. I don't know if it's case sensitive, but I always do it all lowercase. First of all, you know, some of the stuff is going to be obvious, but you know, it might not be obvious if you just started working on this. And I understand that we have chambers that are in a six-month queue and in a three-month queue. And hopefully all of you have are well on your way to addressing the checklist issues and have at least begun contemplation of your essay answers. The benchmarking section is very exacting and requires a lot of research. The first thing I'd tell you, again, this is common sense, talk to your chamber friends. The U.S. Chamber website, you can get 4- and 5-star accredited chambers, and some of these are your neighbors and friends. Talk to them about their basic experiences and ask them for permission to contact them when you have specific needs and questions that will inevitably arise if you're doing this thing right. Now, you all are on a queue, so you've scheduled the best submission date or deadline, and deadlines are absolutely essential to encourage and hold accountable volunteers and staff. But as the driver of this process, be ready with Plan B, an alternate submission date, if you think that additional work is warranted. And I'll tell you the truth, we delayed our application by one submission process, and I'm absolutely convinced it produced one more star for us. You know, when the closer you get to the deadline, sometimes you have that clarity of conscience where you go, you come to the conclusion, you know, I'm not quite there yet. And if that's the case, then by all means, postpone and do that extra work. Although it's best to keep to your original deadline, be ready with Plan B, but just don't tell anybody because then that becomes the new deadline. You know, the old accreditation process used to have you set up all kinds of committees, and thank goodness that's been done away with. I think the new accreditation process is much better. They changed it about 6 or 7 years ago, and it's much, much better than what preceded it. But it would be of some value to have an inner circle or a committee, because having volunteers understanding the process and having them advocate for you at the executive committee and board level, I think is absolutely critical so that you can justify all the work that and attention and staff time that you have to devote on this project. In terms of managing this project, let me suggest that there's a first wave where you gather the easy materials. Check all of the boxes that are just mindlessly simple. That's the first wave. And there might be, you know, documentation is an extremely important part of this whole process. And be thinking about gathering materials that support your check marks. The second wave, identify other doable checks. The ones that you can contact a neighbor, you know, might be a catastrophe or a crisis plan that you can get from a neighbor that you don't have, something that's fairly easily doable, that you can borrow from somebody else, pass through your board, and then make you eligible to check that box. And you can do that in probably 10 to 20 different instances through the accreditation process. And the third wave is borrow, steal, amend, and adapt. You have to make a case that you are an exemplary organization, and that is what your application is. It is your personality. It's the character and uniqueness of your Chamber of Commerce. Now, the checklist is one size fits all, and there's not one checkbox that is absolutely critical to being a 5-star chamber or a 4-star chamber, but it's the aggregation of the check marks that determine where you are in that pecking order. Hopefully this is abundantly obvious. Check every box that you can. Roughly speaking, if you check 90% of the boxes, you'll be eligible for a 5-star chamber. You should try to exceed that. There are things, and I appreciate the caller who's in a liberal community. You know, there's certain things that you can't do. In my community, even though I have a political background, I could not sell the concept of a PAC or endorsing political candidates. However, that was not a hindrance. We weren't close. I mean, we finished with a lot more check marks than we needed to earn five-star status. Next slide. Divide and conquer. In terms of your staff, don't expect the volunteers to do a lot of this stuff. It's nice to process information through them and educate them along the way, but they're not going to do the actual work. I would submit that you have two different types of people in this process. Someone who has writing ability, and then someone who has organizing ability. You need someone to manage your notebook, because one of the biggest parts of the task is to gather all the documentation necessary to make a compelling case to the U.S. Chamber. And then secondly, you need a good writer, because the essay questions are absolutely critical. Do not short sheet your essay questions. The essay questions distinguish you from every other Chamber of Commerce in the country. It's your opportunity to make the case on what makes you special. I cannot emphasize enough, love your essay questions and spend time on them. And, you know, find someone who thoroughly understands your organization, not only in terms of what you do, but the heart, the soul of your organization, because that's where you have the opportunity to explain who you are and why you deserve four-star or five-star accreditation. You know, don't be afraid to pick up the phone with Matthew and ask him questions along the process when you're in doubt about something. Hopefully, all of you feel at ease to do that. Matthew's a fine young man. I've enjoyed working with him the last couple years, and he's picking up extensive knowledge on this process with each passing deadline, and he's going to be a valuable resource for you. You know, we all operate better under deadlines, and I'd encourage you to nail your deadline, but have Plan B in your back pocket. Don't ever admit that there's a Plan B, and you'll probably make your deadline, but you need to be able to make the call that we're not quite there yet. It's more important that you pick up that extra star than you finish in one deadline period early with the thought of we'll get the next one 5 years from now. Do it now. Just do it now. Make three copies of everything that you send to the U.S. Chamber, and you keep two. Let the chamber have one, and then put one in the trunk of your car for your for when you interview for your next chamber position. Serious. In terms of making the most of your success, lobbying rule 101, and it reminds me of that old country song, Lord, It's Hard to Be Humble, but downplay the expectations of your staff and volunteers. If I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. If we absolutely knock the cover off the ball, we're going to get 4 stars. 5 stars are reserved for the very, very best chambers in the country, and I'm not sure we're there yet. If you tell them that you're getting a 5-star accreditation and you come home with 3, a 3-star accreditation is a wonderful accomplishment, particularly if it's the first time that you've been through the process. But if you are being your usual chamber self and upbeat and optimistic and I can beat the world, and you overpromise and underdeliver, it takes some of the edge and joy out of what should be a tremendous celebration for a wonderful accomplishment. So don't play expectations. Even if you think you're getting 5 stars, talk about 4. If you think you're getting 4, talk about 3. If it's the first time, just say it's an honor to be nominated, like the Academy Awards. Be ready for good news. Regardless of what you get, if you do earn your accreditation, think about how you're going to play that with your members and the media. Think about how you're going to market that on letterhead, on your website, on email signature page placement. you know, how are you going to play out that good news? Think about that before you, you know, before you get the word back from the U.S. Chamber on where, you know, what you've earned in terms of stars. Think about media coverage and publicity. You know, press release and articles in your communication vehicles are a necessity. And when we had the expectation that we could earn 5 stars. We were going to do it even if we had earned 4 stars. But we had a press conference with balloons and a hugely oversized marshmallow accreditation symbol, and you know, the dramatic drape over it, and the chairman of the board made the announcement, even though he didn't have anything to do with it. But you know, play this thing to the hilt. You know, it tells the world why you deserve their support. And in hard times like this, we need to make that case every chance we can get. You know, have your communication people, if you have communications people, be ready with plans to market this every way possible and put it on everything possible, because I think this is a real win and a real symbol of success for your organization. I would also tell you that the next accreditation cycle is only 4 years away. And even though we're about 2 years out, we're already gathering materials and thinking, you know, the blog was an excellent discussion in this phone conference. We don't have a blog. By the time we apply, we're going to have a blog. And, you know, the beauty about this process is if you are sincere and you try to check these check marks, and I mean, not just do it for a show, but to be able to confidently do it and know that you deserve that check mark. If you do that, you're going to be a better organization, and your volunteers and your staff need to know that, and you need to be one of the cheerleaders in that regard. But as soon as it's like our newsletters, as soon as you finish one, you're working on another one. Accreditation is the same way. 5 years sounds like a long time from now, but it creeps up on you amazingly quickly. Now, regardless of whether you get basic accreditation, 3-star accreditation, or 4-star accreditation, you know, you have at the next opportunity, you have a chance of even doing better. Don't expect, if this is your first time applying. In fact, if this is your first time applying, 5-star accreditation probably isn't realistic. You know, just getting the basic accreditation is a real accomplishment. And so don't go into this with the concept of perfection. You're going to knock the cover off the ball immediately. You might have to take a 5-year step. You might have to do this one, get this under your belt, and then you'll be much ready to take a swing for the fence next time and get your 4th or 5th star. And hopefully I'm operating under the assumption that most of you have already answered the question with your volunteers, is accreditation a good fit for your chamber? And hopefully this session answered all of your questions. But if you need more support, if you have more sales to do, if you really need to convince your board or your committee or your task force about some of the things that have been discussed here today, please email me and I'll send you my PowerPoint presentation. It's designed to help you make the sell. With that, I would entertain any questions.
Thank you. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the 1 key. Our first question comes from Betsy Sheridan of Hopkinsville.
Rex, this is Betsy Shelton. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I appreciate the fact that you're participating in this call. I'm just curious, as we've done a lot of work on this process already. We have actually been working on it for about a year, and we're getting pretty close. We're set for the March 31st deadline. But I'm just curious, it lists, of course, in the application all the exhibits that need to go, but how much of the other stuff, when you check yes to one of the questions, did you all submit with your application, or did you just allow that yes or no to stand on its own?
You know, if they don't ask for supportive documentation, just let it ride, because think about it from a judge's perspective. You know, we sent two notebooks oh boy, I'm looking at them right now, about 6 inches worth of information, and we didn't send documentation to the things where they didn't ask for it. The other thing that you really need to be organized on this, there's an opportunity for you to include certain documents 10 times. Don't do that. Just make reference to them that it's under tab H or something like that if they're talking about your employee manual or something. Just include it once. You know, your budget, basic information, your business plan. You know, there's 1,000 different places you could plug it in, but, you know, just reference them to a tab. So there has to be a lot of organization involved. Remember this from the point, the perspective of the judge. They're going through 20 of these at a shot, maybe more. These things are thick. There's a lot of detail to read. Make it easy for them. I mean, you'll get an extra star just from considering it from that perspective.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Barbara DeBoom of Palm Desert.
Matt, what are the major weak spots that you see from a 4 and 5 star accreditation? And then also, is there a process of submitting the whole accreditation plan online?
Okay, Barbara. The weak spots, it usually does come down to government affairs, and you are going to see that recommendation to make candidate endorsements or host fundraisers. You know, we are the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're always going to urge you to strengthen your program that way. But like Rex said, it is by no means going to hinder you from getting a 5-star. And then that benchmarking section. It's the newest section, and it just people quite haven't grasped how to answer that. So we have included the new table in the application that was released in 2008. That's gotten some better scores. It's tried to streamline it. What we're looking for is how close you are to achieving your goals that you've set for this year and then for the next 3 to 5 years, and whether you're able to measure and benchmark yourself as to when those goals are obtainable. So those two sections, I think, are the sections that score, you know, fairly low. As for the online system, we are currently pilot testing a version of that application with 10 chambers of commerce. We've gotten some great feedback from them, and we're working with them to improve it, and we hope to have it released by the middle of November. It will be available for anyone that's looking to apply in December and kind of convert their paper application to the online. I know I have a few beta testers or pilot testers that have already volunteered, and of course I'm looking for more. Anyone that's applying in March will most likely have to use the online application. We will make exceptions if you're pretty far into your paper binder. And again, when the minute that's released in the middle of November, I will send out an email, and I think we're also going to be looking at webinars to kind of go over the system, but it's fairly simple to use, and it's basic PDF technology, so hopefully it shouldn't cause any problems. So mid-November.
Thank you. The next question comes from Kelly Bass of Santa Rosa.
Hi. Thank you for having this conference call. It's been really helpful for us. My question has to do with just time involved in compiling all the sections together. We've had a lot of our board is actually incredibly involved in this process, and we have staff members that are working on different sections. And I just am curious as to how long it takes to put the entire application together, because we're going to have staff working on that starting in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
I can open that to you, Rex, if you want to.
Yeah, I'm kind of chewing on that. you know, this is kind of a reckless attitude, but I went into it with the attitude that whatever it takes, and we made it happen, no matter how painful it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly can't assign number of hours. I don't think you could schedule it that way either.
Right.
More power to you that you got volunteers involved. Make sure you have a continuity director so that it reads seamlessly.
That's me. I think we're looking to, you know, with staff time, make sure, you know, all of the managers in our chamber are working on their separate sections, and I'm just trying to figure out the best way to get everybody to put all of their pieces together. And so I think that's kind of where my question
lies. Get what you can from them, but mm-hmm. and just have staff backfill.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the 1 key. One moment, please. At this time, we're showing no further questions.
All right. I guess if there are no further questions, we can wrap this up. Little bit over, but again, I'll be happy to take any questions from people through email or giving me a call. You should have my information. I want to thank our two speakers today, Brad Peck for going over the communications and technology section, and Rex Hammond from Lynchburg going over the general application and giving us some great tips on beefing up the essays and making sure that you check all the boxes you need to. So, again, thank you guys for being on the call. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and look forward to seeing some good applications in December and March.
And, Matt, I'd also like to thank everyone. This is Brad. And it was interesting to hear about your volunteer work and your volunteers there. And, again, I'd just like to stress the crowdsourcing idea that almost anyone can be a media producer nowadays. The technology is there. So, you know, getting the volunteers out there too to submit their pictures and their videos and their articles is can be a very useful production tool and community tool.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.